Welcome back to the sound plays of Traversity, Demons and Demigods, Book 2 of A Bridge of Doom. If you like what we provide, please rate, review, share, and follow on your favorite platform. Questions and compliments can be sent to our email.
Hello. I bet you're wondering why I'm doing this plug. Well, it's a job. I've been unemployed for years, and I'm too young to work. So do us a favor and buy this theater a coffee for a measly dollar.
This theater is not about profits, but the equipment and media do require funding. Though listening to these productions is free for you, providing them isn't free for me, as we are completely free of advertising. If you care to help, please buy our unemployed movie star a coffee via the Ko-fi.com website listed with the descriptions of each episode. All proceeds go to our production material and equipment needs. Special thanks go to our first Ko-fi angel, Juanita Paz Chalacha.
Oh, I like that.
And thank you, truly, for listening.
Lockpins out!
With the game!
Step through the gateway and enter the universe of the Harkin Theater. This is episode 23.
This is book 2 of A Bridge of Doom by Kurt Paul Hotelling. Traversity, Demons and Demigods. The Journeys of an Enchanter.
Chapter 21. Flayna leaned on the split rail fence next to Thasgar and watched their horses caper leisurely in the meadow, seeking out any remnants of the sweet grasses of summer, while a flock of sparrows darted noisily among the trees covering the sharply domed hill beyond. The double suns had just lifted above the trees crowning the hilltop. The half-elf lingered deliberately, not wanting to answer her father's summons.
I am angry at him for his treatment of Gawain.
He had sent one of the youngsters from the village to fetch her like a wayward child, the message one of demand.
Come to me immediately.
He used to do this to her when she was younger, when he decided she needed to be reprimanded or punished for something.
Coming home has been nice.
But now all the unpleasant memories of her father's temper were returning.
He is not a cruel man.
Though his expression of affection for her had always been restrained, as if he wasn't sure of the propriety in loving one's daughter openly.
Well, he can just sit and stew all day if he likes. I am my own woman.
She turned to the boy, who waited to take her reply back to her father.
Tell my father he must come to me. I am no suckling calf that needs to be herded with its mother.
From the dubious expression on the lad's face, she could tell Bahir's reputation for demanding unfailing obedience from inferiors still endured throughout the village. Nevertheless, he took her message back.
Fathers can be heavy tethers sometimes. I was glad when mine died. I was nearly of age anyway and would have left home soon.
I wasn't aware that your father was dead.
Nobody ever asked me. Thasgar chewed on a dry stalk of grass and looked down at her with a placid expression. Not much to say about him, anyway.
Was he unkind?
No. He shifted his position and returned his gaze to the meadow. Just too busy and too worried. I had 3 sisters and 2 brothers, all older than me. Father was always trying to find better jobs to support the family while Mama raised us, but he couldn't do much more than livery, didn't own a sword, and wouldn't let me or my brothers learn to use blades either. He lost all his brothers in one of the bigger Grimm battles and decided he wouldn't let that happen to us. Of course, we were always worried about starving while he worried about keeping us away from weapons.
That's ridiculous.
Well, we were living in Cresden, so weapons weren't really needed. Plenty of constables and soldiers to keep the peace there.
Is your mother still alive?
I don't think so now. Don't really know for sure. She had her hands full after Father died. I decided to help her by leaving home and making me own life. Don't mistake me now.
He glanced at her with a momentary pain in his eyes that flitted away like the sparrows on the hill.
I loved Mama very much.
Then turned back to look beyond the meadow.
I miss her.
Considering what had been said, Flana was able to see why Thasgar and Gon got along so well, each filling a need in the other.
Gon wants someone to watch over and protect. Thasgar wants a close man friend who acts in a fatherly way.
And yet they traded roles frequently. From the rhythm and force of the stride, she could tell it was her father, probably irate and indignant at her reply. She did not turn to watch, keeping her back to the trail.
Flana!
Still thinks I'm just a child.
She knew that tone of voice. Dreading the confrontation, she ran various methods of dealing with him through her mind. She didn't really want to anger him further.
But he is being more unreasonable than I can remember.
And she did love him, despite his disapproval. The problem was his strict upbringing in the belief of the ancients that differed from his chosen way of life. He had married an elfin woman. Interracial marriage or even fraternization is forbidden by the clerics of the old religion. Something he had done out of pure love. He would have been considered an outcast for such a terrible sin, except that he left the civilized areas to help start this distant outpost village. Thus, he avoided persecution and probable excommunication.
I wonder if it wouldn't have been better for him to have faced the consequences of his choice in marriage.
It might have helped him accept Lena's freethinker way of life with much less turmoil.
Well, here he is now, waving the banner of his old beliefs and taking out his frustrations on Gaewon and me.
Then she was struck with an idea. If he insisted on hiding behind the values he was taught, yet rebutted, then she should meet him on the same grounds. She looked to Thasgar.
Please ask this man what he wants.
The archer raised an eyebrow at her, his jaw shifting to the side with amusement.
Sir, my associate asks what you want of her.
What?
Flana still kept her back to Berhir, but could imagine his eyes bugging out with disbelief.
You may inform this man that it is not proper for a betrothed woman to speak with an unannounced visitor.
Before Thasgar could utter a word, Berhir stepped up behind Flana and made to yank her around by the arm, then froze as he caught the cold warning glare in the archer's eye. Conspicuously lowering his hand, Berhir decided better of his temper.
I am her father. It is my right to speak with her.
Thasgar mustered his roundest, courtliest tones.
'Tis your father, Lady Flena. He wishes to speak with you. Do you choose to grant him audience?" Flena put on the airs of seriously considering the proposal, wanting to stretch her advantage as far as possible. And after a few moments, she lifted her chin and replied to Thasgar,
"Yes, I will speak with my father."
"My lady will speak with you, sir." The archer nodded at Brahir, enjoying the contained impatience and frustrated, uncertain blinks the man gave him in return, then ignored the subtle shift of his head signaling him away. He thought it wise to remain at his post beside her on the fence. Flena turned and gazed upon Brahir. What hair he had looked unkempt, and his manner was one of forced gentleness. But he responded quietly to her motions.
"What is it you wish to speak about?"
"I will speak with you alone, Flena."
He darted an uneasy eye at Thasgar.
"I will not leave the company of my protector whilst my husband is not present, father. This is the proper way of ancient society under the gods. Speak if you have words to share."
"It's about your husband. I don't approve of your marrying him."
"You've made that quite clear, father, but it's too late. We are married. I completed my rites of passage and was given complete privileges as a royal citizen and freeman. Are you denying me my right as the daughter of an outpost freeman to choose my mate?"
He gave this question serious regard.
No, I suppose I can't really do that. But why a mage, Flena? A useless, self-indulgent mage!
"Why an elf, woman, father?"
Angrily, he pointed a finger.
"You have no business saying that to your father!"
"And you have no business interfering in my choices."
This gave Brahir pause, and he stood for a moment, crossed his arms, and for the first time regarded her as if realizing who she was. The unrelenting determination in her expression made him break away from his hard stare, and he glanced awkwardly at his feet.
I only say these things because I care about you and your life's path."
"If this be truth, then you should see that I am quite happy with the one I've chosen, and not try to bend my views to your hasty opinions."
"But a mage, Flena?"
"He's not a mage. He is an enchanter."
Brahir lifted his head judgmentally.
"I fail to see any difference. What did he do to snare you like this? What terrible thing did he do to you? What spells did he cast?"
"How did an elf woman trap you?" Brahir jerked his head back as if struck and stared uncertainly at the archer.
"What do you mean, trap me? I chose her."
"How can you be sure?" Thasgar put on a suspicious leer. "I've heard about those elf witches with their wicked pointy ears, how they can cast an evil spell and make a man think he loves them. She just wanted your weed in her."
"Kerr!"
Brahir grabbed at his waist for the sword he had left in his house.
"You say another word about my wife and I'll..."
"What? Kill me? Isn't killing a sin except in defending yourself?" Thasgar stood from the fence and stepped close, crossing his arms and staring hard. "Listen to yourself, man. You can't decide what you believe in, and you're taking it out on your daughter. Do you love Lena?"
"Of course."
"Well, if you choose to share your bed with an elf woman, that's your right. Flena loves Gawain, and that's her right. That's all there is to say." Flena touched his arm.
"Thasgar, please."
"I've just had it with a father who expects his daughter to dote on him till he's dead. You've raised a fine woman, Brahir, but it looks like you forgot to raise yourself." The archer resumed his place, leaning against the fence.
"What happened to Gawain early this morning?"
What do you mean? He's been asleep since before midnight.
Don't play games with me, Flayna. I saw when you and that priest of yours carried him into the house. What happened? Did he gorge himself on opiates?
She could only stare back in disbelief at the accusation.
I've heard about these sorcerers and their mind-burning poisons. Is that how he conjures his demon servants? Is this what you want for a husband?
Have you been spying on us, Father? You don't trust us?
You wouldn't call it spying if you were innocent of sin.
Huh. Well, then I'll just look in your window when you and Lena sleep together. I won't be spying because you won't be sinning. He received an indignant look.
It's no business of yours to pry into our lives, Father. Why are you so afraid of Gawain?
I'm not afraid of that.
Before Bahir could conjure another insulting title for the enchanter, he was stopped by the warning in his daughter's eye.
I'm only concerned for your well-being.
Then spread his hands innocently.
If there was nothing wrong, then tell me what happened to him last night.
Flayna crossed her arms and fumed, then decided the truth wouldn't hurt.
If you must know, he couldn't sleep last night because of all the terrible things you said to him at supper. He went wandering into the fields and got lost in the fog.
Lost in the fog. If that isn't symbolic, I don't know what is. I must have spoken truth if his conscience was troubled. Perhaps he will repent someday. Perhaps even today.
Flayna could only stare back in disbelief at this pious side of her father, which she had never before seen so fierce.
I may have saved your husband with my strong words. Now, perhaps he can find something useful to do with his life.
He felt a rude shove against his back and he jumped.
Who sneaks up behind me?
He turned to see Maledon reaching his head over the fence. The elfin steed curled his upper lip with equine mockery, then turned and ran back into the meadow. Their anger with Bahir was eased. Frowning with confusion at the retreating horse and at his daughter, Bahir decided there was no way to salvage his dignity. With resolve, he straightened his tunic and walked off.
Stupid animal.
Hopeless. How is it he married an elf woman but despises mages so much?
I wish I knew. I never saw anything like this in him when I was growing up. Of course, there weren't any mages around either, or priests of the ancients. Not enough flock to support them out here. Any religious gatherings were improvised during the holy days, for the most part.
Gawain's presence has certainly conjured this man's demon. He patted Flayna's shoulder as she shook her head. You have my sympathies.
I just hope he won't interrupt another supper with this nonsense.
Me too. Ruins the flavor of the meat.
Oh, Thesgar, you're starting to sound like Clough.
She hit him playfully. What did happen to Gawain this morning? I wasn't aware that anything unusual occurred.
Pretty much what I told Father. He was disturbed with what he'd been accused of and was trying to work it out. What I didn't tell Father was that someone came to Gawain's aid. Spoke with him out there in the night. I haven't had a chance to ask him about it yet, but it was clear that whoever talked to him resolved his doubts. He came running out of the field so happy.
Thasgar rubbed his mustache thoughtfully. Aside from what I've seen with Gawain, I know next to nothing about enchanters. But I do know I'm glad he's one of them. I suppose his late night is why he slept through dawn today?
Oh, yes. He was very tired after his ordeal. That's why we had to carry him in.
He stretched luxuriously, then climbed up and sat on the fence. Perhaps he'll tell us what happened over a campfire some night.
Perhaps.
Flayna worried over what her father might do next. Thasgar perceived her thoughts and patted her shoulder again.
Don't worry about Gawain. He can take care of himself. And we'll be gone tomorrow, long before Bahir can erect a burning stake.
Oh, stop that. He's not that bad, I hope.
The two of them returned to watching the horses and the sparrows for a while before heading back into the village.
She never did answer my question about the opiates.
As Bahir walked one of the paths back to the village, he stopped and considered what to do about finding out
just what sorts of things an enchanter does in the middle of the night.
Ignoring two children running past him, Flayna's father stared unseeing into the forest as he wondered how he might unveil some of Gawain's wicked secrets and perhaps prove to his daughter what evil surrounded a mage. At the same time, part of him reverberated with Thasgar's harsh words and tried to admonish him for deliberately prying into matters that were not of his concern.
Flayna seems quite happy with him,
said one part of his mind as another argued.
But she's only been fooled. She was probably forced into it, just like Aneth. That's what others said about you when you married Lena. They were senseless bigots. He's a mage. He is dangerous. He has raped my daughter. He should be stopped and brought to justice. It's my fault this happened to her and him.
Bahir repressed the unwanted memory of his brother's death and quieted his confused thoughts.
It won't hurt to take just a quick look through Gawain's things. If I find nothing, then I could be wrong. But if I find what I think he's hiding among his packs, then I can expose him for the sorcerer he really is. He's bound to be awake and about by now. No one will know.
Slapping his thigh resolutely, he marched off to his cottage and the room where the newlyweds had slept. Finding the cottage empty for the moment, everyone out on their errands, Bahir quickly slipped into his daughter's room, shut the door, and sniffed with disgust at the unkempt state of the bed covers.
The man's a slob as well.
The curtain over the one window was pulled back, allowing enough light to see by. He poked about for a moment, found three or four small packs and pouches, and began to push his hands briefly into each. Mm-hmm. Clothing in one, various odds and ends in another, leaf-wrapped dried foodstuffs in yet another, but nothing even remotely mage-like. He saw Glink watching him with his curious feline expression. He knew their pet couldn't betray him, and he scratched the small mud cat's arching back for a moment.
Good fellow.
He had always liked cats, mostly because of their efficiency, earning their keep by catching and killing mice, and also because they were warm, furry, and usually friendly.
Good fellow.
He continued rummaging. Finding nothing out of the ordinary, he straightened and studied the rest of the room carefully, pausing a moment to hear if anyone might be in the house. There seemed to be no one. Out of the corner of his eye, he could see Glink stretch himself, then resume watching him with round gold eyes.
There must be something.
He walked the perimeter of the bed until his foot struck something hard. Upon investigating, he found it to be a small, strapped pouch tucked under the head of the bed and containing what felt like a stone. Immediately, he upended it and a large crystal bounced onto the bed covers.
With wide eyes, he laid the pouch aside and lifted the clear, unevenly faceted stone in his hands, its rainbow reflections of the indirect sunlight captivating his imagination. His first thought concerned the possible value of such a big gem. But this was dashed as he remembered the many tales of sorcerers and their stones of seeing with which they could scry people and things hundreds of dragon lengths away. One specific legend came to mind as he gazed with fascination into the crystal, that of a warrior at odds against an evil mage. The warrior discovered the mage's power was rooted in his magic crystal, and in the course of a terrifying adventure, stole the crystal and smashed it, thus destroying the mage.
Yes.
Inspired by this tale, Bahir smiled a secret smile. He would find a rock of similar size and weight to replace it, then smash the crystal tonight. Do you find it pretty? Bahir spun around to meet eyes with Gaewon standing in the now open door.
What business have you creeping up behind me like that?
I might ask the same of you.
Whatever you may call it, I am justified in my actions. You are a sorcerer. This is proof.
He held out the stone. Gaewon crossed arms and leaned against the door jamb patiently. I am an enchanter. That is a crystal. What is your point?
Don't play games with me, Gaewon. This is your source of magical power.
Like a hammer or a sword, a crystal is merely a tool, Bahir. I have already explained the source of my powers, if you were listening.
A tool, you say? Then you wouldn't mind if I took it away and smashed it.
Actually, I would mind. That is a very special stone, a gift from a special friend. Besides, you might find it difficult to destroy.
You wouldn't mind if I tried, then?
That's not the point, Bahir. You have taken something that doesn't belong to you.
And you have taken my daughter, something that doesn't belong to you. You have taken my darling daughter's maidenhood.
Perceiving Bahir's unspoken accusation, Gaewon frowned and stood away from the door. Flayna is not a possession and will not be treated as such as long as I am alive.
Don't force me to remedy that, Gaewon.
Bahir made a fist at his side. Are you threatening me?
No need, devil shine. I now hold that which gives your life meaning. Renounce your unholy marriage to Flayna. Leave her here with her rightful family, and I will give you back your crystal.
Cradling the stone protectively, he proceeded to shove his way through the door, but before he could force Gaewon aside, the enchanter reached out his hand and touched the stone. Bahir was stopped suddenly, as if grabbed by a large hand, a wave of powerful tingling washing through his body and locking his muscles. Shocked, and unable to do more than move his eyes, he looked down to see the crystal glowing with an eerie light, and he became frightened, believing he was trapped in Gaewon's evil sorcery. Turn around and sit down. The enchanter kept his hand on the stone. Bahir could only do as he was told. He felt his legs respond to Gaewon's command. Your actions have forced me to do that which I consider most disgusting, Bahir. I do not relish dominating others, but by your intrusion, challenge, and theft, you have left me no choice. He knelt before Flayna's father and gazed into his eyes. You may speak.
Take this cursed thing away from me!
What? Now you don't want to steal my pretty bauble?
Sorcery! We'll kill you, Gaewon. Do you hear me? I will see you burn.
I doubt that, Bahir. Because of her devotion to me, you'd only be murdering your daughter. Be silent before you make more promises you can't keep. Now, Seeing as you are determined to know more about me, wouldn't you say it was fair for me to know more about you? For instance, this intense aversion you have to mages. Bahir glared at him in silent wrath. This won't hurt you. Not physically, anyway. Taking a deep breath, he shut his eyes for a moment to center himself, opened them again, and stared directly into Bahir's eyes. Remember. 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 In the next instant, Bahir's vision was swimming, the room slowly beginning to spin. And then he was looking at his brother, smiling at him from across the standing table.
Charlie!
His brother had been dead for over 30 rieds, and yet here he was, young, alive, laughing beside him his girl, the beautiful Aneth, one of the miller's daughters. Bahir was home, in Cresden, and events unfolded again as they had before. The three of them walked through one of the city's many main squares, its windows, posts, and roofs adorned with brightly colored banners fluttering in the breeze. The festival was joyful, vibrant, and loud, everyone celebrating the mid-season of a rare, cyclical 12-moon summer when both suns blazed in full round orbs, bathing the world with their fullest warmth and light. Chardy and Aneth, with young Bahir in tow, had stopped at an open-air tavern for a cool drink to help combat the warmth radiating from the cobblestones.
You ever gonna try the man's ale, brother?
Chardy shifted his sheathed dueling blade on his belt to the side, then slugged down a good portion of his tankard and nodded at a friend in the crowds.
Oh, don't be so mean.
Aneth shook some dust off her brown skirt and readjusted her white bodice.
He's just 15.
Always glad to come to his aid unrequested, just like a big sister, she smiled conspiratorially at Bahir. Avoiding a look at her ample bosom welling up above her frilly bodice, Bahir shook his head and grinned back as he lifted his tankard. He was used to the jibes, his preference always for fresh trisk pressed from the Cresden orchards east of the city, partly for the sweet taste, partly because fresh trisk was always colder than ale, the barrels submerged in the icy Brandon River, lashed to boats, and towed to the city.
I'll be cooler than you, Chardy, you sweat hog.
Some of the trisk dribbled over his chin as he mocked his brother's slug.
No doubt.
Charty squinted his eyes into the bright skies with their billowing white clouds.
I've only heard about these long summers. This is my first, just like you. Gonna be a good couple of growing seasons. The feast will be wonderful.
Yeah?
Bahir grunted agreement, more than eager to reach the age when he could cut ties with the immediate family, of which he was the fourth son, and find his own orchard to nurture and harvest.
Huh.
Chardy raised an eyebrow with amusement and winked at him.
And how about a good woman for you, like my Anna? Right, girl?
When he turned to where his beautiful betrothed had been standing, she was not there.
Anna?
Hearing no response, both he and Bahir rested their tankards on the standing table and looked around in earnest, then headed into the crowd.
Aneth?
Chardy caught a glimpse of her on the opposite side of the square, being led docilely into an alley.
Bahir!
What?
She's there!
He shoved his way through the milling throngs. The mature Bahir, under Gawain's control, watched with mounting horror as he was plunged into the dark memory, his throat tensing with suppressed screams at being forced to experience it again. Catching up to his older brother, Bahir looked all around, seeing no sign of Aneth. Chardy threw himself down the empty alleyway between tall, half-timber buildings, hand gripped around his sword's hilt and shouting her name. Bahir followed as close as he could. They ran down and took first one turn, then another, and suddenly came upon Aneth and her captors.
Chardy stopped as he took in the scene. Aneth stood with her back to a wall, legs spread, eyes staring blankly straight ahead. One lad was pressing a hand to her shoulder, keeping her immobile while he fondled her breasts. The other had raised her skirt to expose her naked hips and was in the process of loosening his breeches.
Demon spit!
Chardy ran directly at the two rakes, but the would-be rapist spun away with a hand clutched at the thongs of his breeches before Chardy could run him through. As he came around for another attack, the other rake brandished a dagger and pressed it against Aneth's throat. Chardy halted short of the first one, but kept his blade raised. Quickly securing his clothing, the first one smiled.
You want this bronze strips before I have her? There's plenty to share.
You will never have her, demons whiffling.
He was skinny and wiry looking, with a needle-like nose down which he glared haughtily at Chardy.
That remains to be seen, wind sucker. We shall duel. Winner takes Bumbo.
You aren't honorable enough to duel, Mumper.
He snapped fingers at his associate.
Duel with daggers, or he slits her throat, and nobody gets Bumbo.
Helpless to do anything else, Chardy merely nodded once, his gaze dangerous. Then glanced at Bahir, signaling him to move back. As the two young men positioned themselves with the other watching excitedly, his blade still at Aneth's neck, Bahir was able to predict the outcome. Chardy's prowess and strength were visibly superior to the skinny one, who seemed to fumble with his blade more than position it for battle. Finally getting it upright, his other hand upwards with fingers splayed, he nodded at the other rake to give the call to start.
Spit frogs ready? Go!
Just as Chardy tensed to leap forward and slash, the rake flung his free hand at him.
Singa!
A flight of fiery red stars went into his face and neck. Stunned instantly by the magical attack, Chardy could only drop his blade and cover his face. He staggered backward against the opposite wall. The skinny rake was upon him instantly, stabbing him viciously in the chest, then shoving him back off his blade to watch him drop. Bahir was only just comprehending what had happened, never having seen attack magics. Public use of magic in a fight was forbidden by royal law.
You lose, Fleek. No Bumbo for you.
Nodding at his fellow, they made a hasty retreat further down and out of the alley corridor, Aneth still under Geesh and Blade.
Time for a festival poop money!
Chardy!
Chardy was dead by the time Bahir got to his side.
Chardy!
He didn't know whether to weep Chardy. For his loss or scream in anger and pursue the rakes escaping with the charmed Aneth. His eyes blurred. No, his memory was receding from its illusion of immediacy. He remembered how Aneth was found by the city constables outside the district later that day, beaten and raped, but alive. The Magian Alliance was immediately consulted, resulting in an older mage requesting Bahir, or Aneth, to help him scry for the culprit through his crystal and thus bring him to quick justice. But Aneth had been under the effect of a charm geesh and could remember nothing. Bahir, disgusted with mages and perceiving them all as evil, refused to have anything to do with the elder mage or his scrying crystal. The young rake who had killed his brother was never seen again. Aneth was never the same again, becoming distant and separate from Bahir and his family, her eyes forever haunted with indistinct memories of the violation. The world of his memories faded away, and Bahir found himself back in his daughter's room, sitting on the bed with the crystal in his hands and staring into Gawain's eyes. The enchanter's eyes were misty as he gazed with unease and commiseration at Bahir.
I'm sorry to have made you go through that again. That is a terrible burden to have carried all these Riads. I sympathize, but do not take your anger out on me. If you had helped the Magian Alliance, you would have gotten your vengeance instead of this poison in your soul.
He took the stone from his hands and stood.
I release you, Berhir.
The control over him lifted. Berhir collapsed onto the bed.
You bastard! Charney, why did I fail you?
What's happened?
At the doorway, Lena frowned worriedly at her husband. Gawain tucked the stone into its pouch and returned it to the spot under the bed.
Your husband was trying to bargain for his daughter's freedom from our marriage.
What?
She went to her husband and placed hands on his shoulders, but was shoved away.
But here!
I caught him trying to steal my crystal. Seeing as he was so determined to intrude in my space, I was forced to give him the same treatment. In an attempt to seek out the source of his hate, I have opened an old wound of his. I doubt he will ever forgive me.
Gawain looked at his own hand with disgust.
He left me no choice.
Wishing he could believe what he said and feeling suddenly very miserable with himself, Gawain headed for the door, wanting to be away, to cleanse himself of Berhir's hatred.
Stop!
Lena approached and touched his arm.
You have a choice now. He has hated himself ever since that day for his brother's death. He's always believed he could have prevented it somehow. You have indeed opened a horrible wound. Will you just leave him like this?
Gawain looked into the elf woman's deep green eyes and appreciated the respect he saw there. She did not demand, but implored.
Gods!
Realizing what he had done, he shut his eyes with revulsion.
His hate has made me do the one thing for which he despises all mages. How can I have been so foolish?
Anger blinds us all. Come, I will help you.
She sat next to her husband and soothed him with gentle whispers as she ran hands along his arms. Repulsed with the idea of affecting the man's mind again, Gawain fetched his crystal, knelt beside the bed, and lifted one of Berhir's hands to rest it on the stone. Flayna's father was oblivious to his surroundings. Glink observed all from the windowsill, and shifted in his place as he felt the Gawain's discomfort. Hesitating, the enchanter tried to shake off the aversion he was feeling towards delving again into the man's memories, but could not, and knew this would negatively affect his efforts. Lena looked at him questioningly, waiting for him to commence. Seeing her distress for her mate, Gawain was struck with an idea. He took one of her hands and rested it over Berhir's on the stone, then placed his over theirs. He knew she was a freethinker and familiar with methods of going within.
Open your third eye and follow the path you see to your consort. It is best that you bring him back. I will assist you through the crystal.
Lena smiled appreciatively and closed her eyes. Gawain joined her and watched the inner from above as the elf woman retrieved Berhir from his private chasm of self-blame and prejudice. With feelings of love and hope, she coaxed him back to the surface of his awareness. And as she did this, Gawain did his best to invoke a heavy mental fog between Berhir and his painful memories, a reflection of his own night out in the field. Soon Berhir came out of his emotional stupor, sat up with tear-stained face, and looked at the both of them.
What happened? What are you two doing?
We found you in here.
Asleep on Flynn's bed, love.
Looking at what was in his hands, Bahir's eyes flared as if he was affronted.
What is this thing?
You must have bumped into my crystal. I keep it under the bed. I use it as an aid for contemplation. Helps me relax. That must be why you fell asleep.
Bahir scowled, trying to remember something, but could not find what he sought. Then relented.
You should have used it last night instead of sleeping in the dawn.
He shoved the stone into Gawain's hands and stood from the bed.
Cursed mage things! A man should have better things to do than play with shiny rocks!
Waiting until he was out of earshot, Lena grasped Gawain's hands.
He may never realize your forgiveness for his irrational behavior, but I do.
She kissed him lightly.
Thank you, Enchanter.
Suvarage de Ratiche, Suvarage ove Esther.
I wish your forgiveness for my actions, Lena. I do not like hurting others. Lena beamed her warmest smile as she patted his arm.
You speak the elfin tongue perfectly. Clef taught you well. You are a good man. Of course you are forgiven.
She misconstrued his frown as one of worry.
You have corrected your mistake, haven't you?
It would seem so, with your help. He covered his anxiety, not wanting to mention that he knew only a little common elfish and none of the varying elfin kindred tongues, despite his long companionship with Clef, and hadn't been aware that he was speaking it. The unusual circumstance of his fluency in dwarfish had been momentarily forgotten, but now, coupled with this new development, he began to worry.
What or who is doing this to me?
Bahir will be fine. We did well. Now come help me with preparing some of our stock for you to take on your journey. Could I interest you in helping prepare supper this evening too? Flaina tells me you and Clef are very good cooks.
Supper that evening was surprisingly pleasant. Fresh baked bread and churned butter, stew thick with meat and frottums, trisk, ale, and fruit pies, with the added spice of some exciting pioneering stories told by Bahir as he happily recalled his volunteering for an outpost village.
I was one of the first to volunteer. Yes, an outpost.
The creation of which was decreed by the king to reclaim the old kingdoms of Felstar.
I was young, but adventure. Establishing your own place, your home. First by ship, then by wagon.
To this territory. And all his adventures, good and bad.
A few mountain men in the way.
Gawain wondered over his sudden fluency in Elfish and what this could mean, but achieved no resolution. Bahir managed to avoid talking very much with Gawain, every now and again stopping and frowning at the enchanter for a moment with mild bewilderment, then shaking his head with dismissal as he tried to remember something far out of his grasp. There were no more unpleasant scenes between them. The next morning dawned gray with the threat of rain, but they had to forge onward regardless, Calron's pursuit foremost in their minds now. Using the necessary seeking incant taught him by Trimble, Gawain was able to divine Calron's direction, unchanged, still heading southwest. Later that day, he would communicate this to Trimble via his crystal and have Chania sail for the Dread Mire coast. From there, she and her sea troops would strike inland and hunt for the Dark Mage from that side. With luck, they would snare him in the two lines of their gauntlet. Farewells were warm between Bahir, Lena, and the group.
Fare thee well, fare thee well. Goodbye.
Bahir even deigned to grasp the enchanter's hand with a piercing glare.
You've done well so far in taking care of my daughter. See that you continue, or you'll answer to me. Fare thee well, Gawain.
The next leg of their chase proved less than quiet.
This is performed for a live audience. Traversity, Demons and Demigods, Part 1. Sound plays of the second novel were written, recorded, directed, mastered, and produced by Kurt Paul Hotelling. Copyright 2024. Character voices for Episode 23 are performed by Geraldine Cummings, Lauren Angelique, Richard Hammer, Darcy Aradell, and H, the Great and Powerful. The Sextology of Novels are available through Amazon.com, on Kindle Books, can be ordered at your favorite bookseller, or can be purchased directly from the author. Merely submit a request to our email. The wonderful music for this episode of the Harkin Theater was composed and performed by the ensembles of Mocha Music, Evan McDonald, and licensed by PremiumBeat.com. Public domain music performances are licensed under Lieber Creative Commons. Sound effects and original Foley provided by freesound.org, Mixkit of Victoria, Australia, Cusp Studios, and the BBC Library. This was recorded on location in the universe.